Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
They all needed money. Some needed more, some less, but they all needed it. So why not help one another? It's called the wheel because it never stops moving, Sue said. Twice a month, we meet. A different member hosts each time, and the meetings were just parties, really. And at those parties, they took turns giving and receiving gifts to one another, to lift one another up, as women should, as they must. What kind of gifts? Pam asked, feeling a little tipsy, a little lightheaded. That's the best part, Sue said. Cash. The gifts are cash. But if I had the cash, Pam started. You only need it once, Sue explained. A joiner's fee. All new members bring cash. The cash is pooled and becomes the gift. See how simple it is?
That's Megan Abbott, the award-winning New York Times bestselling author, reading an excerpt from her latest gripping suspense novel, El Dorado Drive. It's the story of the three Bishop sisters. They grew up in privilege in the wealthy suburbs of Detroit. But as the auto industry declined, so did their fortune. As luck would have it, the sisters came up with a way to make their own money. It's an exciting club called The Wheel. The Wheel offers the Bishop sisters the opportunity to make their own money without relying on husbands or families. But The Wheel's success and their own addiction to it leads to more risks and a crime so shocking that it threatens to bring everyone down with it.
It's the first of my books I've ever set there, but it sort of seemed perfect for the Detroit area. You know, I grew up in the sort of shadow of the sort of slow collapse of the auto industry in Detroit. And so it was always sort of in the air. You know, this city had really suffered. And where I grew up in Grosse Pointe, it was majority of people I knew, parents worked in the industry for one way or another. So it sort of seemed perfect for this one about anxiety about money, particularly because I set it in 2008, which is when the auto industry bailout occurred. So it was really when two of the big three car companies were about to declare bankruptcy. So it felt sort of like this sort of perfect moment for a book about money and anxiety about money.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. A lot of your novels focus on subcultures. What is it about subcultures that you find so interesting?
Yeah, I often ponder this because it's something I've realized rather than planned. I suppose it's sort of how they make their own rules, and their rules that are pretty independent of the larger world. And there's often this sort of, I don't know, it's like this secret place, you know, there's its own lingo, you know, in this book, there's this sort of secret language, there's sort of, you can sort of reinvent yourself in these subcultures, that you may have a different persona in the world at large. They're also, I think, pretty dangerous often for all those reasons, particularly the fact that they do make their own rules. I think that's really what it is. It sort of becomes this sort of separate space outside of society, sort of para-society.
Mm-hmm. Very well said, and you're exactly right, that revival, when you're part of a subculture, you get to reinvent yourself, and that's so true. Yeah. Your main characters in El Dorado Drive are the Bishop sisters. Can you tell us about them?
I don't have any sisters, so I seem to always write about them, perhaps so for that reason. Deborah's the oldest. Pam is sort of the starriest, is the middle, which is unusual for a middle child. And Harper, the story is told through her, is the youngest. And they've all really made different choices in life that have led them to this moment where they all need money. In some ways, Deborah is the most conventional. She married the sort of proper attorney and had child and does everything you're supposed to do. And Pam, sort of as the sort of larger than life one, married a real up and comer, a real hustler, a go getter, and that ended poorly. They're divorced as the book begins. It's a very contentious divorce that has cost her a lot of money. And then Harper is the youngest. She's not straight. She has no interest in getting married. She's, you know, never bought into the facade, I guess, it's the other sisters are. So she's quite different. But they're all really, they're quite close in that way, sisters. sisters are, where it's always sort of layers of competition and rivalry and petty grievances and then deep love, all folded on top of each other.
Yeah, definitely. Can you tell us about the exciting new club that the Bishop Sisters join?
Yes, it's called The Wheel, and it's inspired by, I think I read about, 50 of these that have occurred in the world at large. But they sort of fascinated me because they're not like multi-level marketing schemes, for instance, that we keep hearing something about. They're really positioned as investor clubs. And the whole idea is that you invest in each other. So you bring money in, you pay an initiation fee. And then if you bring more women in, eventually you're going to collect the big pot of all those initiation fees. And so there's something so deceptively simple about it, and so enticing. And a lot of these real life ones I looked at often do use the language of feminism that is about female empowerment, which I thought was so interesting, because these are all women in their 40s and 50s, and they've sort of hit this sort of speed bump or more of their life. It hasn't turned out how they wanted, and this somehow seems like the solution to everything, and therefore is deeply seductive as a prospect.
Harper comes to the realization that money is rarely about money. What does money mean to the Bishop Sisters?
Yeah, I think a little different for all three of them, but I think this, it's sort of all these things at once. It's sort of security, independence. I think particularly for Pam, who's been in this marriage, I think it's power. It's kind of a restoration for Deb, whose husband is sick. It seems to promise some kind of restoration of better times. And I think for revenge, I think Pam, it's a little about that. Because her husband is not paying child support, and perhaps worse. And so I think it kind of floats through all these things. For Harper, who has a debt due to a bad romance, I think it's really kind of penance to her for making poor choices. So it gets really tied. And I think for everyone, money is never just about money. But I think for women, because, I think this is less so now and will never be this way again. But for so many generations, it was very tied into the man in your life, if you had a man in your life, and that they often control of the household, the purse strings. I mean, I still remember, having to sort of help. I mean, I didn't really help her. She had to get my uncle to help her, but my mom to untangle the family finances after my father passed away, because he organized them all. So it was that way for so long. And so I think that's why it gets complicated for women.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm sorry about the loss of your father. You dedicated this novel to your mother, Patricia Abbott. She's also a writer. Did your interest in writing come from her?
I think both of them. They were both writers, and they were both huge readers. So, I mean, my dad wrote political theory books, so it's different. But my mom always wrote fiction, always stories, and we would, always, our weekly trip to the library where we'd come home all with our big stacks of books. And so it was really built into the household. It was a house of books. So writing seemed pretty natural for that reason. I still remember my dad's office, and the door would be shut. You did not knock on that door as he was writing. So he always talked about the movie The Shining and how much he identified.
Right, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Exactly, yeah. Your fellow crime novelist, Laura Lippman, has said that everyone could tell that you were going to be a star from the first book on. Did you feel that Laura was right about this? Did you have that kind of self-confidence at
no.
the beginning of
your career? Yes, okay. That's so nice that she said that. But no, I didn't at all. I mean, I kind of fumbled into publishing novels. I didn't really know what I was doing. My first novel, I just kind of wrote as a side project. And I mean, I took it very seriously, but I didn't know how publishing worked or any of that. And my first books were considered, you know, this is charitably considered niche books. They didn't sell very well. They were, you know, set in the, you know, the 30s and 40s and 50s. And so I didn't feel that way, but I knew I loved it so much. And I knew once I wrote the first one, I was never going to stop. So I sometimes I think tenaciousness gets you further than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Your stories always follow this three-act structure. Can you walk us through the three acts without revealing spoilers?
Yes, it's, you know, and I wasn't really aware of this until someone pointed it out to me, but I do always start with temptation, weakness, temptation, seduction, and then the middle is always the sort of sin, the sin itself, the act of the sin, and then there's some kind of redemption, not for everybody. I mean, I think spiritually for everybody, but there has to be some kind of hope at the end. I mean, some people would say that there isn't in my books, but I think there is. I like to end with the characters you care about the most on their feet.
Hmm. Yeah, very well said. Yeah, you're bang on about that. Congratulations on A24 adapting El Dorado Drive for TV. Will you be writing the screenplay?
Yes. In fact, I've been working on the pilot. So so the pilot's now finished, which was wild because I had barely finished the book when I started. I had to sort of reconceive it for visual medium. But it was really fun. And this is a book that's set around a series of parties. You know, it's all about these parties that the wheel holds. So there's something very visual, I think, about that. So that kind of helped. But it's been a blast, actually.
Mm. Yeah, can't wait to watch it. You have said that you always want to go to a place you haven't gone. And I find this to be a very fascinating sentence. How does this idea apply to El Dorado Drive?
Yeah, I think, boy, now that you say it, I mean, certainly it's the first book I've set where I grew up, and that did have all these resonances, even though the story itself doesn't reflect on me. I was very aware, you know, it's a very upper middle class and up community. And we were not that family, and I was very aware of what, that there were sort of two growth points going on at once. And one, you know, you belonged to at least one country club, you had a boat, you had sort of all these things that, and I can't say I even wanted those things, but that to write about women that are desperate for money is certainly, and feel like they're being pushed out of the place they once were is really interesting to think about. And it was funny, the book starts with a graduation, a high school graduation, and the sisters are talking about how grand the graduation parties used to be. And I just went to my nephew's graduation back in Michigan, and I overheard that same conversation among the parents. So I think everyone's sort of declining. There was a boom time, and the boom time is past, I guess, is the feeling. Though Detroit has really reinvented itself, just not through car, not dependent on cars this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your fellow writer Dan Shaun has said Megan Abbott is the 21st century's answer to Patricia Highsmith. Are you a fan of Highsmith's work?
I am a huge fan. I really, in fact, just this spring, I reread all the Ripley novels for the first time since my 20s. They were magnificent. She's one of the ones that I always go back to. There's something so mercenary in her writing. There's a fearlessness to her. I mean, she is someone who always wants to go someplace she hasn't been, and that is she inspires me.
Yeah, she's great. I have to congratulate you on Adventures in Movie Going with Megan Abbott, the interviews that you do for the Criterion Collection. I especially enjoyed your No Country for Old Men interview with the Coen brothers. Do you have future plans to expand to doing the Late Show with Megan Abbott? Like, not a talk show per se, but seriously, where you talk about movies.
I would love it. I love doing those so much. I mean, they make me nervous, but because you never really know what's going to happen. I love doing them. And the Coens that are so important to me. So it meant a lot. And I love... I love sort of even just preparing for it and diving into, you know, I was talking about rewatching all the David Lynch. Sadly, I will never be able to interview him, but though I think he would be a tough interview, he does not like to interpret his work. But I love the whole experience of it. And it's been great working with them. I'm working on an essay for them now for the Stanley Kubrick box set that's coming next year. So.
Yeah. Do you know what your next book's going to be? Anything you can tell us about?
I'm working on it now. I'm a little superstitious. I can say another thing I'm working on that I feel more solid on, which is because I never know if the book's going to quite take off till it hits a certain thing. But I am working on another TV project with Scott Frank, who his new show Department Q is on now, and he did Queen's Gambit, and so we're writing an adaptation of Dashiell Hammett's Red Harvest for Netflix. So that should be amazing.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure. I think I've been lucky enough to talk to you now like 5 times or something like that. So congratulations on El Dorado Drive. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you, and looking forward to the A24 adaptation and future novels.
Oh, thank you so much. This was such a pleasure.
Megan Abbott is the author of El Dorado Drive. Find out more about Megan and her work at wpr.org/beta.
We don't necessarily think of humor as an extremely vulnerable act. But just think of how much of yourself you put out there when you try to tell a joke.
Coming up, writer Damon Young on his new anthology of essays, That's How They Get You. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.